normally do is I ask a question to the folks in this room and viewing this from home, is how are the children? In many parts of the world, when adults greet each other, rather than saying, how are you, they ask, how are the children? They know that when the children are well, the community is well. And so each week we have invite a guest in to speak to us about these issues. And today we have Michaela Gore. She is a senior at Franklin High School. Michaela, could you please come forward? Michaela has competed 3 years as part of the Franklin's mock trial team, including last year's regional champions. Michaela is also the co-editor-in-chief of Franklin's student newspaper, a candidate for Franklin's Rose Festival Princess. Star Wars is one of her passions, but so is politics, which is why she will be attending Willamette University next fall to start pursuing a degree in political science. Michaela, thank you very much for being here.
Good morning. Today I want to talk to you about schools, which is I'm sure something you hear about a lot from students. Because our state gives Portland Public Schools the same amount of money per child as they do the rest of the state, despite the fact that we have more special needs kids, I think that we as a city have to dedicate money to our schools. I think it's ridiculous to have classes where students have to rush there to get early so they don't have to sit on a counter. I have been in one of these classes at my school, and I know friends who have had these classes at my school. I think it's also ridiculous to introduce new programs into the classrooms without giving adequate money or training, as well as by making the class sizes so large that the programs don't really work anyways. I think it's ridiculous to stick non-English-speaking students in the back of classrooms because they have no translators and no class to go to. I think it's ridiculous to cut 4.5 teachers from a school that already is having problems meeting standards because we have too many students who skip. Franklin is a good school. I've found a good place there. And they have some very dedicated and talented teachers and also some students who really, really want to learn. But the less funding we get, the less attractive and successful programs we can have. Franklin used to be known for the law program. And as of now, there are only 3 classes that have to do with law at our school. There's forensic science, intro to law, and mock trial. And the majority of kids do not take these classes, and this was once a program that attracted people to Franklin. The less programs we have, the less high-testing students choose to come to Franklin. I chose to go to Franklin even though it wasn't doing very well when I was in middle school, and I'm really glad that I chose there, but I wish that there were more students who could test higher so to give us more money and more chances to do things. The school will inevitably fall into a pit of low funding and the cycles of low testing, the less attractive the school becomes. I'm really tired of seeing my school classified as another failing Southeast high school. I think it's time as a city that we take a responsibility for our own schools, and if our state won't do it and our country won't do it, we have to do it. It's our duty to our children, and I think that in the long run it will benefit Portland. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I really appreciate your words, Michaela, because this is an important issue to the city. Last year, the city of Portland gave $10 million to the schools, plus another almost $12 million in direct services. And we also assisted in ensuring that a local levy option was passed here in Portland. So I think the 5 folks up here are committed, but we also need the larger community to be part of the solution. And for parents to take more interest in their children's activities, as well as folks who aren't parents. So I really appreciate your words, and good luck. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Can we give this young woman a hand? And with her is her younger brother, Jeff. Okay, we're going to open up council. Please call the roll.
Adams?
I unfortunately, or fortunately, have a commitment down in Salem where we're having a lobbying and rally for the civil unions bill, so I just wanted to let people know ahead of time that I will be leaving early from council and appreciate the point of privilege. Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Sten.
Here.
Potter.
Here.
I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which entity he or she is authorized to represent. So we'll begin with communications. Please read item 199.
Request of Robert Butler to address Council regarding failures of the Portland Police Bureau. He called and is not able to make it.
Okay.
Item 200. Request of Kim Carlson to address Council regarding the Walk Safe Umbrella Project.
Thank you for being here, Kim. Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Kim Carlson. I co-chair the NWDA Transportation Committee, and I'm here to tell you about the Walk Safe Umbrella. Just over 1 year ago, two women had dinner together at a 23rd Avenue restaurant, after which they were hit by a car as they crossed 23rd Avenue. One was killed. Neither the surviving pedestrian nor the driver involved claimed to have seen each other. It was nighttime and raining heavily. Our neighborhood responded with requests to PDOT for pedestrian safety improvements, and Commissioner Adams initiated a series of meetings with my committee, the Business Association, and PDOT, resulting in traffic calming signs, parking removal where visibility was impaired, and a crosswalk marking criteria that will benefit all Portland neighborhoods. On behalf of residents, employees, and visitors in my neighborhood, thank you, Commissioner Adams. But we still need to see pedestrians. Black garments and umbrellas are not visible to drivers in low-light conditions. I had an idea for an umbrella design, and I approached Shed Rain, a local maker of high-quality umbrellas and rainwear. At the time, I had no idea that the company owners had known Sarah Kogan, the woman killed on 23rd. And they embraced this project in memory of their friend. So here it is. Yellow is the new black. Yellow fabric is particularly visible on cloudy, gray, and wet days at dawn and at dusk. Reflective trim catches the light from headlights and streetlights to visibly announce the pedestrian to oncoming traffic, and clear plastic panels provide the umbrella carrier with the ability to see approaching traffic from two directions. In addition to applying their expertise to improve the design, Shed Rain chose to include the WalkSafe umbrella in their catalog. This step removed an enormous barrier for NWDA, which was the upfront cost for a minimum order of 1,200 umbrellas. In February, a story in the Northwest Examiner generated a lot of interest and was followed by a news item in the Portland Tribune, a story on Coin Channel 6 News, and most recently, a feature in the downtown section of the Oregonian. The NWDA Transportation Committee began pre-selling WalkSafe umbrellas in February. So far, we've sold 340. Orders have been taken from as far away as Bend, Oregon, and Long Beach, Washington. I have been contacted by several neighborhoods, particularly in Southwest Portland, where no sidewalks exist. I've set up a program through the Neighborhood Coalition Office that will provide an opportunity for all neighborhoods, neighborhood associations, to sell the WalkSafe umbrella if they choose. I've been in contact with the Portland, Oregon Visitors Association and anticipate selling this unique umbrella at the Visitors Information Center in Pioneer Square. I'm exploring the possibility of neighborhood schools selling them as a fundraising item. When the WalkSafe umbrella is available in April, they will be sold at Food Front Cooperative Grocery and 3 Fred Meyer stores for $20 each. Until then, NWDA is pre-selling umbrellas for only $15 a piece. So I'd like to invite you to contact NWDA through the Neighbors West Northwest Coalition Office where we would be happy to take your order.
So what's the number folks could call?
Well, you have it on your...
I know, but the folks at home can't see that.
I wish I had the...
I have it.
You're making it work too hard.
823-4288?
823-4288. Yes. Thank you very much.
Sorry, I should remember that.
Kim, I just want to thank you for being such a strong and good advocate on the issue of pedestrian safety. And this is the umbrella that took a lot of work on your effort to bring to fruition. It's just one of the many great works that you've done on behalf of not just pedestrians in Northwest Portland, but this will have a benefit citywide. So on behalf of PDOT and all pedestrians, I just want to thank you for all your leadership.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please read the next.
201, request of Russ Holcomb to address Council regarding children's rights.
Thank you for being here. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
My name is Russ Holcomb, and there was this thing that happened, and I didn't believe what she was telling me, but I thought she was trying to lure me out of the country to have me killed. Like, she was some sort of assassin from the CIA or something that I met in a CIA secret prison from when I got radiation sickness. But it turns out everything she told me was true. Like, she got her pictures taken. She wasn't a prostitute. And they'd steal her money by injecting her with drugs. And the next morning she'd wake up and they'd try to trick her into thinking that yesterday was a dream and that today's the photo shoot. And then she'd go and get her pictures taken again. They'd inject her with drugs and take her money again. And every time she made like $100,000, they'd take her to court and make her write out a check for all the money. And I just couldn't believe her, but she had all these, I thought she was a robot from outer space or something. And she had all these little robot friends. Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, I thought they were CIA people chasing after me. There was Barbara Walters trying to do an interview, but I thought she was also a robot trying to get me killed because she wouldn't walk across the street with me to talk to her. And I just thought she was like some sort of weapon of mass destruction. And there's witnesses and Barbara Walters, Jack Nicholson offered $10 million for me to marry her, and I thought it was a trick, like there was some sort of nuclear bombs that went off in L.A. and Seattle, and that they were trying to just give up my hopes and the last minute. So when they said the doors are closing, Fort Dasami to Becha, I got off the max and just hoped that we weren't about to get nuked, and nothing happened. And so I ran away, and I don't know. Then I seen her on TV, and I recognized her, because they were these people. They were from some other dimension, this second dimension, and they were trying to lure me into their world, and I couldn't go, because I just was, I couldn't believe it. Because they all knew about the uranium, and they were trying to just get, they were trying to help me, but I thought that they were just crazy. And so pretty much I have a daughter, and she's trapped on some desert island, just like she told me that she would, that the daughter was. And I wouldn't get on the airplane with her and Britney Spears, because I thought they were just these little rich girls trying to brainwash me into thinking that they could just buy a plane ticket for some guy to go somewhere in some other part of the world and just drop them off. Made my mom have to pay money to give me back or something. I don't know.
So, Russ, do you live here in Portland?
Anna Nicole Smith, I think she used my ID to get, my address to get an Oregon State ID card.
Russ?
Yeah?
Do you live here in Portland? Okay. Maybe I can talk to you afterwards.
All right.
Okay.
I was hoping that somehow my friend Ryan McIntosh, he's in the Marines, he wants to be famous. I was thinking he could go up there and help her. She's like surrounded by these insurgents and they all want to shoot her. I was thinking he could go up to the Bahamas because it's kind of like the war on terror because they killed her for all of our money. I don't know.
Okay, thanks for being here, Russ. Commissioner, do you know Commissioner Leonard? He's gonna help you. Please read the next.
202, request of Helen R. Stoll to address counsel regarding prostitution, pornography, and drugs in Sandy Corridor.
Morning, Helen.
Good morning, Honorable Mayor and Commissioners.
Please state your name for the record,
yes.
And you have 3 minutes.
I'm Helen Stoll, and I'm a member of the Park Rose Business Association as well as the Hollywood Boosters. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. I'm concerned about the information that another porn shop may be going into the Park Rose area at 9500 South Northeast Sandy Boulevard. That will make 4 porn shops between 87th and Sandy and 109th and Sandy. The last time the issue was on the ballot to regulate pornography in Oregon, 65% of the public did not want porn in neighborhoods. The night before election, Ginny Cooper, with the Multnomah County Library Association, probably at public expense, got on TV and threatened that if this bill passed, we could not keep a personal diary or read the diary of Anne Frank. That was not true, but frightened the public into voting against it. Where's Commissioner Leonard, because he spoke about that last Wednesday. Since then, porn has proliferated in neighborhoods, bringing prostitution, drugs, recruiting of girls for porn and prostitution, and other crimes into our neighborhoods. I don't like to have to pick up condoms, needles, and sex toys and appliances outside my home and business. At noon one day, when kids were going to lunch in our neighborhood, I found an empty box with in full color illustrating male genitals and ball separators. We are keeping Hollywood clean during the sewer and beautification project. Occasionally, we see a he-she prostitute or a young teenager on McDonald's parking lot. One approached my car. Perhaps you got my play that I wrote. I left it at your office last week. How could any girl do that? Now, my next project is going to be how could any guy do that? Because I'm wondering, researching why men get involved in prostitution and pornography. And I want to commend the police for taking care of a situation when a school policeman was filming girls at high school. That's very commendable. And I'm sorry for this officer, because he said that he did this because he had an unfortunate situation at home, and that he had witnessed a fellow officer shoot a 71-year-old man. I'm very sorry for him, and I hope that he can face the future in a more acceptable way, leading to personal growth rather than to his decay. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Helen.
Thank you.
Please say hi to Norm. Please read the next item.
203, request of Fred Bueller to address council regarding the repaving of Sherwood Place.
Morning.
Morning. Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes, sir.
Fred Bueller. God, I'm sitting over in that chair, and I'm thinking to myself, I've been here before on the same issue. So I live on Sherwood Place, which is a chip seal street. And as I said, I've been here before on the same issue, so I thought I'd go around a different direction this time. And so here's my bid to repave the street by all 30 people. I got all 30 people to agree $900 apiece. And I've been full circle with the City of Transportation as far as trying to work with them on doing it legally. You know, we wanted to do it possibly and just go ahead and do it. Andrew Abbey, I've been working with him since March 1st of 2006. The stumbling block seems to be something along the lines of a maintenance agreement that is somehow connected with the subdivision in the 1950s and the city, but no one can really produce the maintenance agreement. Drainage may be a problem. The another alternative is an LID, but that's all a very, very expensive situation as far as everyone is concerned, and no one wants to do that. Chip Seal Street, just for your information, is just oil and gravel, and nothing's been done for probably the last 10 years. I've been on the street for 15 to 20 years or more than that, and nothing has been done. I would think we'd be able to do something as far as repaving the street ourselves. Gary Boyer is on my street. He says he knows you, Commissioner Councilman Adams. I just wonder if there's some alternative that we could do. Again, I say I've been a full circle with the transportation department within the city, and I just don't get anywhere. I'm ready to go. We're ready to pave the street last August, and again, the maintenance agreement came up, and the city attorney has been consulted on this, and we just don't seem to get anywhere.
Well, I want to, as transportation commissioner, I just want to thank you for all the great work that you've done to try to address this issue, and I wish that I had more of you scattered throughout the city on the hundreds and hundreds of miles that are deficient. What stands in the way, having looked into this issue personally, what stands in the way is the stormwater issue. It's not a maintenance agreement. The fact of the matter is that this is a steep slope area that we need you to get a stormwater engineer or geotechnical engineer to take a look at your plans and to sign off of them in terms of how the stormwater would be dealt with. One of the a sort of sad fact is, because the current street is in such bad repair, a lot of the stormwater that it produces right now goes into the ground. And having taken a drive along the street, I also know that this is, in addition to the concerns from the professionals, just seeing the amount of stormwater myself that's produced by the street and how neighbors have sort of diked it and channeled it to try to keep it out of their area. What really stands in your way is getting someone with professional expertise to sign off that what you seek to do will not cause damage to the adjacent property owners. The reason why that's necessary, if you'll recall, last winter, a section of Cardinal Drive caved in. And we have, like, once we take the street on, after you pave it, and I want you to pave it, and I want to take the responsibilities for the street on, we also then accept the liability if, in paving the street, it produces that stormwater starts damaging adjacent property owners. So what stands in your way, having looked at it, is only getting an engineer to sign off on how the stormwater will be dealt with.
Is that my engineer? I mean, we'd have to hire an engineer on our own.
Yeah.
Not the city.
Correct.
So my last question to, I'm not sure who, was, well, why can't we just re-chip seal the street? Same condition that it's in now. And the response I got there was the city bought too many windshields, and so they no longer do that.
Yeah, about 20 years ago, the city stopped doing the chip seal repair. And the issues, though, on stormwater would still be the same. You're taking a street that, because of its poor condition, absorbs a lot of water, and you're turning it into a new chip sealed street that sloughs off a lot of water. And we deal with being sued all the time, plus it's a danger, when we allow road improvements to go forward that have not been properly engineered. So getting an engineer to take a look at this, and I'm happy to facilitate a list of folks that could do that for you, is what stands in the way. Regardless of whether you chip seal it or you pave it, that part of town, we just have too many slides and we take on too much liability on behalf of the taxpayers. So it's a pain, but there's a public purpose to it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all the communications.
Okay. Move to the consent agenda. Do any commissioners wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Does any member of this audience wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read the 9:30 time certain.
Item 204, present Portland Citizen Disability Advisory Committee Work Plan 2007.
Would the representatives from the Disability Advisory Committee please come forward? I want to thank all of you folks for the hard work you do on behalf of the community that you represent. And I appreciate you coming into council today and also developing a work plan. While these folks are coming up here, I want to remind everybody that this is Multiple Sclerosis Awareness Week, and ask all folks to learn as much as they can about that particular disease so that they can deal with it not only in their own lives, but in the lives of their family and friends. So whoever is going to speak first.
Good morning. My name is Jan Campbell, and I chair the Portland Citizens Disability Advisory Committee. And I want to thank Mayor Potter, as well as the commissioners, for letting us have this time to present to you about the committee. I know all of you from being employed here, and it's kind of funny because I actually chaired the first committee in the 1979 era, or 70 era, and did it until, and then became staff on it, and now I'm back chairing, so it's kind of like a circle, so that's very, very exciting. I wanted to talk to you a little about the history, and then I have part of the executive committee up here with me, as well as other individuals who chair the subcommittees, and they want to talk to you a little about the priorities of our work plan, which we developed. In 1973, the Rehabilitation Act was passed, and it stated that all people receiving, or all government, I guess I should say agencies that receive federal monies, needed to not discriminate against people with disabilities. It was not a civil rights law, but it was a non-discrimination law. And in that, it was required that they form a committee to help put that in place, and they had to develop a self-evaluation plan, which is mainly employment policies, and a transition plan in which is facilities and making them accessible. And that is why originally the City County Advisory Committee with Disabilities was formed. And they were formed around, I believe, 1976. I did not come on board till 1979. When the law was passed in 73, it did not become implemented till 79. And that's why they had to get a group together to help them do this evaluation and transition plan. I was at Oregon, and I came back, and there was a committee already in place, and I was asked to chair that, and that is exactly what we worked on, was, again, the self-evaluation and transition plan. We were under, at that time, the Metropolitan Human Relations Commission, so it was a branch of that commission. And during that time, the commission was funded both by city and county, and the commission was appointed by chair and the mayor, and then we had our committee under that umbrella where we did not actually get appointed by the chair or the mayor. At that time, the committee had one staff person, and then they had their own budget. So they actually had a budget for traveling, education, expenses, etc. Our main and focus was to monitor again, the Rehabilitation Act, as well as to be a liaison between the community and people with disabilities, and to work very closely with the city bureaus and county bureaus to help them to come into compliance. And that actually was the focus of the committee to do that until 2004, when I retired, and the focus has changed a little for this new committee, which members will talk about in a few minutes. We were under the Metropolitan Human Rights Commission till probably, Human Relations Commission till probably the mid, late 1989. Probably 1990 is around when we changed to the Human Rights Commission. And at that time, again, we were still our own bureau. And so I was involved in that bureau. But because money was tight, the money that I had for my own budget or for the committee and my staff was put into the Human Rights Center. And so we lost funding at that time. We didn't really lose it, but we put it all together so that there would be a bigger pot for the whole center. But it was still funded. We had staff people for the committee, a secretary. Again, because the county did it half-time funded it, and the city half-time funded it, we had a full-time position for that. Again, as the 90s went through, it got funding got a little more difficult. County pulled out. And then we still had a half-time position plus myself to fund the work of the committee. And then I retired. And then Mayor Potter brought on board again and with your help got this new form committee, which is called the Portland Citizens Disability Advisory Committee. And our mission is to advise the city on disability issues to create a more inclusive Portland for all. We have 15 members, and I'm going to introduce them in a minute. And then we have subcommittees, which will tell you what the work plan is for. We also want to reach out to the community because we know it's very, very important to include and to organize the disability community. So we also have associate members, which will not be non-voting members at this time, and we haven't formed it. We've talked about it, but it's not really in place yet. We're working on it. And that will include more the community. We'll help them to get on committees to bring up disability issues as well as work on. We always like to talk about universal access and universal issues, but just to get the voice heard about what the issues are for people with disabilities. And that is forming. Another thing that we really are wanting to do is do events. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But again, we want to make sure that the community is involved on all the steps. We meet the second Thursday from 1:30 to 3:30 here at City Hall. And we sure want to invite anybody to participate. We have a website up, and it's just going really, really well. So I want to thank you all for supporting it. Now I'd like to introduce our members. And if members could either stand or raise their hands, that would be helpful. And I'm going to turn around so I can recognize. Trish Baker. Anne Bazell. And Anne actually is with the National MS Society of Oregon. She's the director.
Thank you for being here, Anne.
Henry Bennett, I don't believe is here. Lynn Calloway is not here. Myself. Roxy Troser, I believe is how you pronounce it. She's not able to make it. David Halseth, who is our scribe, is not here. Joan Hansen. Nancy Heselman. Michael Levine, who's our vice president. Anne O'Malley, who is our communications officer. And Beth Omansky. She chairs one of our committees. Martha Simpson. And Steve Weiss. So that's our group. We're very excited and enthused, and we're all ready to roll, so to speak. So I'm going to first introduce our education and training chair, and that's Beth, and she's going to talk a little about you, about our work plan for that group.
Good morning. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to present to you. My name is Beth Omansky, and I'm a researcher, writer, educator, and I'm have been a disability advocate for many, many years. I am very excited that our education subcommittee has met twice now, and we are in the process of developing three projects. The main project, the one that we have decided is the most critical, is to do educational workshops for city employees to do some training on disability issues and disability training so that city employees will have a better idea about, we want to do some myth shattering. And I believe, Jan, you'll be talking more with the city council people later on about that.
Right, we've set up appointments with the different council members. And, Dan, I'm glad you're back and feeling better. We had to cancel, he needed to cancel a meeting. But that's when we're going to talk to them about how we can involve education and work with the bureaus and maybe get a liaison to work with us as well.
The next project that we decided on is a public venues project. And we want to go around to venues where events are held, indoor and outdoor events, theaters, museums, restaurants, to make ourselves available as a resource on accessibility issues. There's not much more to say about that. I guess that was succinct enough. We've just now, since we've met just twice, we are just now, you know, starting to form. We just decided on these projects last month, and this next month we're going to be bringing in materials from workshops that have already taken place in the past in different areas and begin actually doing the workshop developments. And the third thing that we're going to be working on, excuse me. Did I say three already?
No.
The training, the events, and the...
Oh, I'm sorry. We're going to be going around to university disability-related offices and set up kind of a coalition with them between our committee and universities to do work on some joint educational projects across the city. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
We're very excited about this committee and look forward to working with you all on it as well.
Thank you.
Appreciate your support.
Steve.
My name is Steve Weiss. As some of you know, I've been doing housing advocacy in the city of Portland for more than 10 years now. Arguably, the most important linchpin in the life of a person with a disability is affordable and accessible housing. I'm currently serving My fifth year as chair of the Housing Authority of Portland's 504 Disability Advisory Board. And while the Housing Authority does an exemplary job of providing subsidized housing for people with disabilities in Multnomah County, it also has not been shy about telling people that out of those low-income people with disabilities who qualify for a housing subsidy, only one out of four heads of households with disabilities actually have a housing subsidy. What that means in reality is that a lot of folks with disabilities are paying 40, 50, 60, 70% of their incomes, often rather meager incomes, for housing. That really has to end somehow. Our housing subcommittee went over a number of possible priorities that we would focus on this year that we would recommend to the City Council because it would be within your purview. We came up with three top priorities. The first is to recommend that you support and encourage the completion of the BHCD proposed inventory of accessible housing. As some of you know, this actually came about during the Roland Stroll when we were at the old church at the end of it. And although it's taken a while, it is going to happen. BHCD informs me that an RFP was put out to hire a consultant to do that inventory, and a committee will be formed to choose that consultant. We will have a representative on that committee. Hopefully we'll be able to choose that person next week at our meeting, actually. And we will have a role in the outcome of the inventory, and I'm very pleased about that. I want to thank Mayor Potter, who committed to this at the Roland Stroll, and I think it will be very helpful for all concerned to know what's happening out there in regard to accessible housing units. Beth Kay and Tracy Lado of BHCD have told me that they're going to do a very diligent job of the specifics of accessibility in housing units in the city. So I'm looking forward to that. Our second priority is that we'll be developing a plan for displaced tenants when manufactured home parks are sold. It's estimated that 80% of manufactured home owners in Oregon are retirees, and a large but undetermined number of those retirees are people with disabilities. They would have to be, because a large but undetermined number of seniors in Portland are people with disabilities. We are very concerned about what will happen to those folks if the parks that they live in within the city of Portland are sold, and they will be displaced. And so I will be working, and our committee will be working with other folks in the housing advocacy community who are familiar with this issue. And at some point in the coming year, we will have some recommendations for the council. Our final priority is to create a proposal to the council about adopting visitability standards that would help make housing more inclusive. I noticed on my agenda it says visibility. I think you're going to have to start making a distinction between visibility and visitability. Visibility means you don't look like Claude Rains throughout most of The Invisible Man. Visitability means having an accessible entrance/exit for any person with a mobility impairment. I can tell you that in many parts of Portland, most of the dwellings do not have such an accessible entrance/exit. I have friends who cannot get into my house because I don't have that, and I live in the inner southeast. It's only when you go into East County that you find residences, because they're flat and they're ground even, where folks with mobility impairments can actually enter and exit a dwelling. Something needs to be done about that, and we'll come up with some suggestions during the course of this year. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Anne O'Malley, and I work with Metro Nonprofits. I do a lot of their lobbying and disability advocacy. I'm also the communications chair, but I'm doing the outreach committee. And you might guess the outreach committee is in charge of reaching out to Greater Portland and making sure that they know that we're here, that Portland cares about their concerns and issues as far as accessibility and affordable housing and everything that dovetails with the whole disability arena. What we're going to specifically try to do is hit those underrepresented populations and bring them in and have them bring their concerns and issues to this committee so that we can somehow liaise that into city policies or municipal policies, whatever is required at some point in time. Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Michael Levine. I'm chairing the Subcommittee on Transportation. As Steve pointed out, housing obviously is very important, but also I believe that transportation is very important. Without it, you don't get to the doctor, you don't get to the grocery store, you don't get to have a life such as going to a movie theater. So I've spent about 7 years now specializing my advocacy in the transportation arena. Our committee has taken on four projects. The first one, which, by the way, you'll see that they all pretty much tie together. But the first one are curb ramps within the city of Portland so that people that use mobility devices obviously can get around. The other thing I believe that, or I hope that you understand that a lot of these things also are universal design, such as the curb cut. A curb cut also makes it easier for a parent, et cetera, pushing a stroller, people with rolling luggage. I mean, again, a lot of what our needs are tie into universal design and make the city a better place for everybody. We're also looking at the temporary two-year mall. That has a lot of issues, which I'll go into in a minute, which also will tie into curb ramps. We're also looking into safe and clear passage on Portland sidewalks and crosswalks. And we're also going to be looking into audible crosswalk signals for the new mall. As long as everything's being torn up and replaced, I would hope this would be the time to add some more audible crosswalk signals. Curb ramps, again, on the temporary mall, and I am pleased to say that Sam Adams' office, and I'm very, very sorry Sam had to leave early, but Sam Adams' office and PDOT have been working with us. There are approximately 34 curb ramps on just 3rd and 4th Street. We haven't even gotten into 2nd Columbia and Jefferson on the temporary mall that are not in, I hate to use the term compliance, but they're truthfully not in compliance, which also makes them dangerous. And it looks like we're going to be able to address, starting this month, the ramps on 3rd and 4th Street. Also, we are planning to look at the transition plan that Jan mentioned earlier. We hope to also see the revised transition plan, and we're also very interested in coming up with even more revised transition plans to make sure that curb ramps and accessibility throughout the city becomes more prevalent for people with disabilities. I would also like to, when it comes to talking about curb ramps, and I know the mayor has brought this up many times, and again, this is especially where, I'm sorry, Sam is gone, but I would love to challenge the commissioners to do the same thing the mayor did and come along with us on a roll and walk. I think, Mary, probably more so than the other commissioners, you know what I'm talking about from your experience when I'm talking about steep curb ramps.
Mm-hmm.
The two-year mall, again, I've touched on the curb ramp issues. There are a lot of issues, and I know that that the city and TriMet are in partnership on this new mall revitalization. I'm not going to go on into this a lot. I actually have more notes that I'm going to go into, but there are a lot of issues besides just curb ramps, which have to do, unfortunately, with a lot of TriMet policy that is not in compliance, which Jan, I, and Trish are on the advisory committee to TriMet for our accessibility, and we're working with them, and I'm hoping to get the support of Sam's office, because we truly believe that the condition of the mall, the condition of noncompliance at the move to the mall right now, has taken away equal access for public transportation, and the mall being the hub is truly troublesome to us. Safe and clear passage on Portland sidewalks and crosswalks. Especially in the summertime, which spring is approaching, with the cafe furniture, chairs, and I've owned a cafe and I've put out chairs and furniture, and I do understand the importance. Also, the A-frame or the A-board signs or any type of sign on sidewalks. Well, this becomes, you give an inch and miles are taken. Before long, there is no access to the sidewalks. Jan and I have been out together where we've actually had to go into a restaurant to ask them to move tables so she could even get by. It becomes an obstacle course for a person that's using a cane, meaning low vision or blind. This is something that we really hope can be addressed. I've talked with PDOT, and they're coming to visit with our committee this month, and that is going to be a topic. And to give you, crosswalks, we need more enforcement downtown. I have actually had my cane run over while I was in a crosswalk crossing the street. So we do need to look at the accessibility. And again, as I talked about earlier, as long as the new mall is going to be constructed, we're hoping to look into what budget money might be available. I know that's a funny term, available budget money, but maybe we could add even more audible crosswalk signals. Thank you.
Before we open it up to questions, if you have any of us, I do want to thank some very instrumental people who are helping to support the group. And I'm told not to say staff, so I won't say that, but these people are very important. They are within the city. And one is Amalia, who's the director of the Office of Neighborhood. But in Bob, and I think Amalia actually used to work under Amalia. And Nicole, and she's been a wonderful help to the group, to the committee. And then Desiree, did I pronounce it right? And she's our intern. And we sure couldn't do it without their support and your support. So I want to thank you all very much. Are there any questions? Oh, you guys are good.
We're going off easy.
Well, we will be meeting with you, all of you, I hope, individually, and we'll talk a little more about how we'd like to form the partnership and work together to make Portland really inclusive for everyone. Thank you so much.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Was there a sign-up sheet?
There was. No one signed up.
Okay. I need a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Please call the vote.
Sir. Leonard?
Thank you very much for this great work, Jan, that all of you do, and the various volunteers. This is very important work. Aye.
Well, thanks to this new reinvigorated committee, and it's a very important committee, and we count on your advice to help make this city a better place for everybody. And so I appreciate Jan's remarks about you're ready to really roll, and I want to state that I'm interested in going out with you sometime and doing what the mayor did with you and seeing firsthand some of the barriers and obstacles and some of the shortcomings we have in our urban design that we need to overcome. So thank you for all your work. Aye.
Well, Jan and team, thank you as well. I thought this was inspiring today, and my friend Steve, I'll follow up and make sure, I think we're okay on the BHCD work, but make sure the housing inventory is happening. And I do appreciate the focus on trying to make sure we know as we do some of these rebuilding projects, because I think that, if we do the light rail rebuild, we need to get that right now, because it's not going to happen again. And the exciting thing about cities, which is actually, I think, moves into our next discussion of lowering our oil and natural gas usage, is that they're always being rebuilt. just constantly. Like every block gets rebuilt every certain amount of time, and I think that this is our chance to maybe get it right. And I think if you keep on us and keep the leadership and the inspiration, we can make progress until we get there. So thanks for your dedication. Aye.
Potter.
We promise.
Well, I want to thank the group, all the folks who showed up here today. I think in terms of declaring that I have a lobbyist in my family that lobbies me constantly on these issues, Joan Hansen, sitting with my wife, Karen, has been a very strong advocate. So I really appreciated the opportunity for that stroll and roll. That really made me what I thought, made me very aware of things such would be simple to us that are so difficult for the community with disabilities. The curb cut, which I thought was looked fairly, you know, to my eyes as a walking person, looked fairly fairly easy to maneuver. When I tried to do that in a wheelchair, it was quite difficult. And I saw at least one other person have a difficult time, and the curb cut is out in front of City Hall. So it became very obvious to me that it's not just about designing curb cuts, but designing curb cuts that work, so that they can be useful for the people they're intended to be useful for. So thank you all for keeping this in the forefront of our thoughts and our actions as a city council. Aye. Thank you. Please read the 10:15 time certain.
Agenda item 205, accept the report of the City of Portland Peak Oil Task Force.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Members of the council, I'd like to start out by offering a substitute resolution.
Okay.
The substitute resolution reflects, I think you have a copy, Carla. Well, basically reflects some additions from Commissioner Adams.
So that he left some amendments, that is incorporated into this?
Yeah, as of
Brendan.
As of Monday, these are the changes that Commissioner Adams was comfortable with.
So I don't want to get caught in the middle between you two, so I'm going to ask your staff to look at them to see.
Anyway, so the substitute is what I would offer for discussion and a vote.
Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
I can second it. I'll second
okay.
it. Okay, thank you. I want to start out by, first of all, thanking the members of our City of Portland Peak Oil Task Force, many of whom are here today, so I want to thank them for their tireless devotion and hard work on this report. And I'd like them to just stand if you're here. I want to read the names of them. Richard Benner, Christine Caruso, David Cohen, Angela Crowley-Koch, Lisa Dixon-Gray, Alan Lee, Gene Longley, Bill Scott, Sally Schullinger-Cross, Marcus Simmental, Randy White, and Rowan Wolf. So thank you very much. The issue of peak oil, and this is the report this task force worked on for over 6 months and is delivering to us today. The issue of peak oil is one that many communities around the world are troubled about for good reason. A growing body of energy experts believe that the world has already arrived at or will soon be at the peak of global oil production. And just as disturbing are the areas identified for potential exploration and production of new oil, which in many people's opinions will have dire environmental consequences for their development. The changes to the availability of affordable petroleum products will have significant impacts on transportation, housing, food, and other life essential products and services. If there were a significant spike in the price of oil or natural gas, it has the potential to affect almost all of the activities, operations, and policies of our city. With the lack of leadership and action in regard to this issue at the federal level, we must prepare to act locally. But this is not, nor should it be, only a concern for policymakers. The uncertainty and potential for an energy crisis has citizens troubled and anxious for answers to the question, what will we do? And indeed, members of our community have reacted by forming a citizen-based effort to explore the question with greater detail and analysis. Portland Peak Oil is a grassroots group of concerned citizens who have come together to create community, prepare and do public outreach in anticipation of coming crises due to the end of cheap energy. It was about a year ago that the Portland Peak Oil Group approached my office about these concerns and how we as a city would be prepared in the event of an energy crisis. I share their concerns, as I believe the whole council does. It is a topic that has touched upon each of us as commissioners and members of City Council. To respond to this, the City Council created the Peak Oil Task Force in May of 2006 to develop recommendations on appropriate responses to uncertainties in supply and affordability of oil. 12 citizens who I just named were appointed to the task force in June of 2006. The mission of the task force is to identify key short-term and long-term vulnerabilities and to develop recommendations for addressing these issues. Over the past 6 months, the Peak Oil Task Force held more than 40 meetings and involved dozens of policymakers, experts, stakeholders, and interested citizens in gathering information and preparing a draft report. The Oregon Department of Energy also loaned a staff person to help this committee in its efforts. Their recommendations provide the city with the guidance needed on how to move forward. The accompanying resolution, sponsored by the entire City Council, will establish a goal to reduce oil and natural gas use in Portland by 50% in the next 25 years. It's an ambitious goal, but I think it's a goal that Portlanders are up for the challenge. It will also provide the direction for an effective strategy to achieve the recommendations and initiate a revision to our local global plan on global warming, which I intend to work closely with Commissioner Sten on. I would also like to suggest that once we're through with our budget process, that the Council have a work session to check in and evaluate how we are progressing on these recommendations. It will take each member of Council's involvement and leadership within their respective bureaus, and I do not anticipate this to be an unwelcome task with the passion that each of you has displayed. Commissioner Leonard's work on furthering the development of biofuels, Commissioner Adams' efforts to reduce vehicle miles traveled, Commissioner Sten's leadership in our city's fight against global warming, and Mayor Potter's continued commitment to having our city prepared for any type of emergency and the building of livable, self-sustaining communities. I look forward to continuing this work with each of you and would like to thank your bureaus for their ongoing involvement. And I also, again, want to express to the task force and the Portland Peak Oil Group that we encourage your ongoing involvement as well. Now I'd like to bring up Michael Armstrong of the Office of Sustainable Development and Bill Scott, who chaired the task force, to give us a little more detail on their recommendations.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Michael Armstrong with the Office of Sustainable Development, and I've had the pleasure of providing staff support to the Peak Oil Task Force. I'll give a brief introduction to some of the process and then turn it over to Bill Scott, who will really talk through the recommendations and findings from the report. As Commissioner Saltzman noted, the task force was created by resolution in May of 2006, really to look at information on oil and natural gas production, as well as how it's used, especially here locally, and the web of impacts throughout the economy and community. The resolution also asked the task force to seek community and business input on the solutions and then develop recommendations about how the city can respond and prepare for this, including recommendations on how it can help inform citizens. 12 citizens were appointed to the task force. They first met in July of last year and quickly divided the issue into four topic areas: land use and transportation, the economy, food and agriculture, and public and social services. And those areas obviously have a lot of overlap, but they also allowed for some more in-depth research into different aspects of this. The task force formed committees to explore each of these areas, inviting experts, stakeholders, citizens to all the meetings, and reviewing the available research and analysis. Each subcommittee outlined its findings and then brought back to the full task force a set of preliminary recommendations that were then discussed and revised by the group as a whole. That's the process that led to a draft report that was issued in January and put out for public comment. During the public comment session, the task force held a couple of public forums, met with the Planning Commission, the Sustainable Development Commission, the Food Policy Council, among other groups.